White Rocket Entertainment.
White Rocket Entertainment, podcast number 317.
I'm Brandon Marcello, and you're listening to the AU Wishbone.
A miracle in Jordan Hare! A miracle in Jordan Hare!
And according to my sources, it's an almost credible sports discussion.
They're not going to keep him off the field tonight!
On the War Eagle Sports Radio Network.
We welcome you to Jordan Hare Stadium for tonight's game.
Chris Davis takes it in the back of the end zone.
Let's watch some football. Now everybody. Come on, everybody.
They're not going to keep him off the field tonight.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yo, yo, yo. Let's watch some football.
Hello and welcome to the AU Wishbone, brought to you by White Rocket Entertainment, in association with the WarEagleReader.com and the War Eagle Sports Radio Network, and by people like you, the Auburn family, and the AU Wishbone family via Patreon.com. I'm Van Allen Plexico, and I'm joined as always by my co-host.
I'm John Ringer.
Apparently Java Update is my co-host tonight. This is what happens when you restart the computer right before the show. All the little bells and whistles literally start popping out right when you're on the air. So, did you hear those little chimes, or was it just on my end?
I thought it was some special intro music.
Yeah, no. If only that was Microsoft welcoming you aboard, not me. But yeah. So anyway, here we are, John. The regular season and the championship game are over. This is our kind of post-season pre-bowl edition. I guess we'll probably do another show before our actual bowl for sure, because this is only going to be the December the 12th episode. But I guess we can kind of look back at what we think about the season in the rearview mirror now. It's hard to believe, isn't it? I mean, every year, you know, every June or July, I always say, it's going to be an eternity until the season gets here, and then when it does, you'll blink your eye and it's half over. Well, we blinked our eyes twice, and the season is already over. It's just amazing that the 2017 season is in the books now, and we can digest it and think about it and sort of pass judgment on it, so to speak. And by the way, I've got my little Auburn toboggan on, but I can't hear even myself or you. So hold on a second. I'm gonna. My head has been so cold today. It's kind of chilly around the country today, and this week. There we go. Now I got my ears exposed. I can actually hear things. Okay. So we've had a week to think back about the 13 games that this team played. They went, I believe, 10-3, losing to Clemson early, LSU in the middle, and Georgia in the championship game. So 10-3 is actually the final record, I believe, that Terry Bowden's last full season had. The 97 team was 10-3, if I remember correctly, because they went 9-2, and then they lost the SEC championship game, but they won their bowl game.
Mm-hmm.
So this team has a chance to do something similar, but with a 12-game regular season. So what are your feelings looking back now in 2017? How do you sort of – where do you rank this season, and what do you think about it?
Hey, well, first of all, you hit the nail on the head with the "it went by really fast" comment, because it really did. I was just enjoying it, and then it was gone.
Yep.
And those fall Saturdays are a precious few.
They are indeed.
So that's number one off the top. The second is, I mean, I really enjoyed this season. I think this was an enjoyable Auburn team to watch, and they didn't win every single game. But that's not my definition of enjoyable. I think this team had a lot of talented players, and they played hard, and there were some really fun, big moments, and there was some dramatic moments, even in the games that weren't the huge games, that made it fun. And I think this, the other thing is, I think this team got better and came closer to reaching its full potential than some other Auburn teams we've seen. I honestly think, like, the, you know, the way they played in the Georgia and Alabama games and Jordan Hare was very close to as well as they could possibly play.
Yeah.
You know, with the players they had on the field. I mean, so I think it's always the fan perspective is always to go, well, they could do that plus get better. But I think that was, you know, really maximizing what this team could do and what this team had. And I think it was very enjoyable to see an Auburn team play to their full potential and beat, you know, two of our biggest rivals in games in our stadium. And, you know, and neither one was a nail biter. I think that was really huge for Auburn and for Gus, obviously, but for this team as well, in terms of confidence and to show what they could do. So that, what do you think?
This was a team that either beat the hell out of other teams or lost in extremely frustrating fashion. Because I believe every game we won by double digits. I think every one of those 10 games we won by double digits. Because we beat Georgia by 23, Alabama by 12. And I know we beat all the other SEC teams by double digits pretty much. So if we won, remember, because the closest, remember the closest game we'd won was Mercer,
mm-hmm.
up until I guess Alabama, including Georgia. Man, if Georgia could have just played us in that game a little more like Mercer did, they'd have had a chance. Georgia's like, man, if we just played better than Mercer, as good as Mercer that time. Yeah, it was just a very weird. It was weird in the sense that they either steamrolled teams or they lost in frustrating fashion, because the three losses were all – here's the weird thing about it. The three losses were all completely different from each other, yet all three were frustrating. The first loss, we were in it and had every reason to have won it, and by just strange play calling and rustiness, and it was early and all that, by a bunch of just fixable, I thought, problems, we lost the Clemson game. We could have won it. It was very close. But we, you know, we were very, very close to him the whole game. Okay, the second loss, LSU, we were leading like 20-0 in the first quarter. And then we slowly, by nicks and cuts, the death of a thousand cuts, gave it up to him and lost in a loss that was in some ways kind of made me think of the Florida State National Championship game in a way. So that was a completely different way from the Clemson game. And then we lost the Georgia SEC Championship game. It looked much more like one of our 2016 losses, where we played great defense but just couldn't play, you know, nothing but defense the entire game. And after scoring on the first possession, we just couldn't get anything working all the way to the end zone again. So we had a very frustrating close loss. We had a loss where we had a huge lead and blew it. And we had a loss where we just couldn't find the Pacific Ocean with a flashlight with the you know, against a team that wore us down, and eventually we couldn't get anything offense going, and it wore the defense down. So three completely different losses in three completely different ways. That's pretty unusual. I'm not sure what that says.
It is, but there's a thread in those losses and in the larger season that I want to talk about, and that is the play and the depth chart and the decision-making at Auburn's running back position.
Okay.
Because we went into the Clemson game and Kerryon was already out.
Yep.
He was hurt. So we had
Petway hadn't even played because he was suspended the first game.
That's right. Because Petway was suspended, and we didn't trust the other young running backs. We overused Kerryon in the very first game, and he pulled a hamstring. And so, I mean, I want to, you know, it's one of those things where you want to go back to Petway, go back in time and go, what are you doing?
Yeah.
You know? So that was, it could, because if Kerryon, when you look back and see Kerryon in these other games, if Kerryon had been healthy and played in the Clemson game, we would have beaten them.
Oh, yeah. You know, that's the second most frustrating thing to me about this season after the losses, because of how they happened, is that we never once, as far as I know, never once had Petway and Kerryon on the field at the same time. That's unbelievable. Considering they both played multiple games, and yet it never crossed over.
Didn't they both play against Arkansas?
Yeah, maybe so, but Petway was very ginger in that one. It was very
He came on at the end of that game, and we had pulled Kerryon out of that game. But
he was hurting by then. Let me try again. We never had a healthy Petway and a healthy Kerryon at the same time, because that would have, to me, been like 2004 with Cadillac and Ronnie. And that's what I wanted to see this year so bad, and we never saw it.
No. And we didn't, and not just that, but you know, by the Georgia game in the championship game, we had neither. I mean, Petway was out, and Kerryon was 30% or whatever.
Right.
So, you know, I think the toll of not having Petway over the course of the season wore on Kerryon. I mean, he was great, but we needed Petway in a lot of those middle games. To take some of the pounding so that Kerryon, you know, would be fresher and have less hits at the end of the year.
I'm gonna put this out for you. I want your reaction to this. If we had had a healthy Kerryon and a healthy Petway, and of course it's hard for any team to go through an entire season with two running backs both healthy the entire year. I understand that. Of course, in 2004 we did, but for the most part, but. I know that that's hard, but let's just say in a fantasy world, they both are not suspended and they're both not hurt the entire season. I think this team goes undefeated.
I think there's a real possibility of that, yes.
They'd have beat Clemson. They'd have beat LSU. They wouldn't have given up that lead to LSU out there. They had Petway out there blasting away for 80 yards a carry.
Yep.
And that Georgia game, I mean, it was 13-7 in the fourth quarter.
Well, and it was 13-7 with Kerryon doing nothing.
Exactly.
So if he'd have been healthy alone, even without Petway in that second Georgia game, we'd have been fine. But
yes.
I think that's a realistic scenario. But it's not just that. So there's those two, but then there's also the decision making. Mm-hmm. Once Petway was out, the decision making in a lot of those middle of the season games, from like game 3 to game 8 or 9.
Yep.
About playing the other running backs and not overusing Kerryon, that is just baffling.
And especially when you consider that, again, we won every win this entire season by double digits.
Yes.
There wasn't a game that we won where we were coming down to the wire, down 2, or needing that field goal or something. Every game in the middle of the season, we won by double digits. So even if you put Malik Miller in there and he fumbles, you're still up double digits. Then you put Kerryon in. It's just – that's pretty strange. And that is – that culpable negligence or something, or malpractice?
No, I think we know, you know, this coaching staff and how they feel about – certain things. And number one, they're always going to rely on an upperclassman, an experience, not just upperclassmen, experienced players.
Right.
I mean, if you're a freshman and you're a great player like Marlon Davidson or whoever, you're going to get in there.
Or Kerryon, his first year, even played a lot.
Yes. But I think, you know, in terms of run, the other thing is like Kerryon doesn't fumble. I mean, he fumbled in the championship game when he was hurt, but in the regular season games, he didn't fumble.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, they trust him, and they trust – the other thing is they trust – we were going to more of a passing offense. where we pass the ball a lot more. And they trust he and Pettway in pass blocking. And I think it's very clear they do not or did not trust Cam Martin in pass blocking.
Yeah, that was pretty
I think
obvious.
They felt like he was going to get Stidham killed. Mm-hmm. I think that was the big thing in hindsight. And mm-hmm. But I still didn't understand, given that, why we couldn't play him or Miller or Barrett, you know, five carries a game in some of those games. I think it would have really helped carry on. I don't understand that at all. One series or a play here and a play there. But that was really kind of inexplicable to me. I mean, I just
Yep. I agree. Without getting into any specifics at all, because we've got lots of shows coming up over the next few months to talk about this, do you just in general right now, do you expect next season to be better than this season in terms of outcomes or worse?
I'm thinking about it. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's tough to say we'll win 10 games.
Yeah. Especially,
I mean, I think this team's going to be really good. I think, you know, we'll talk in a minute about who's coming back and who's going in the NFL potentially, but right. I think this team's going to be very good and very talented. But we play at Georgia, mm-hmm. at Alabama, which again, that's two playoff teams you're going to play on the road. And we play Washington in a neutral site game. Mm-hmm. You know, who's going to be a top 10 team again. And we still got LSU. So Tennessee rolls onto the schedule and they're not going to be a train wreck, theoretically.
Right.
So,
right.
I think it'll be comparable, but, I think it'll be comparable. I think we'll be close to where we are this year. How about
yeah.
that?
Yeah. Yeah, and I hate that because that's why I felt like this is the year. I mean, we'll have Stidham this year and next year at least. And I felt like of the two, this was the year where things stacked up better for us to do a lot while he's here. Now, Malik Willis may be great. I think he will be, but, you know, so 2019 may be another really banner season, but we'll have a lot of turnover between now and then. So, yeah, well, we'll see. We'll see. There'll be a lot of turnover all over the conference. Yeah. So you wanted to compare this to other Auburn teams. I already compared it to the 97 team in terms of outcomes, but I think that they were – in some ways better than the 97. I think from top to bottom they were better than that. I think the 97 team had several really good players at key spots and were okay everywhere else. I mean, you had Damian Craig and you had, you know, the really good linebacker and the really good safety, Martavius Houston and
Stakia Spikes,
yeah. You had like a handful of super good college players and NFL players there. And the kicker was good, as always. The offensive line was pretty decent. We had some good receivers. The running backs were not very good. They were okay. They were about as bad as we ever get in running backs for an Auburn team. But this year's just was a very different team in terms of the way it played. But that, they ended up with the same that team lost.
How about 2005 or 2002?
Well, there are a lot of similarities to 2002 because we beat a Nick Saban team we weren't supposed to beat handily both years, and we had a lot of problem with running backs getting injured because that was very similar. Remember in 2002, we lost Cadillac early on at Florida, just like losing Pettway. And then we lost Ronnie Brown just getting worn down, being the only other guy pretty much, just like Kerryon. And so we went into the last game without either one of them. And that was why we had the Trey Smith Iron Bowl. So, mm-hmm. yeah, there are some similarities with that 0-2 team. I agree. 0-5 beat Georgia. Kenny Irons was a good solid back, kind of in the mold of a Kerryon, sort of similar in a way. Beat Alabama and Georgia. So who did we lose to in 05? We beat South Carolina, I remember. Beat the crap out of South Carolina that year. That was the year that Cox had the great pass to beat Georgia on 4th and 10, and they fumbled
yes.
it and fell in the end zone, all that. That was the last time we had beaten Georgia in Georgia, I think. Isn't it the last time we beat
yes.
Georgia in Georgia? And I'm trying to think. That one had another very close, frustrating loss on the road to a Tiger team in a valley, because we lost at LSU on the missed field goals.
Yes. I blacked that out. Thank you for bringing that back.
You took me down memory lane. You got to hit the potholes with me. Memory lane's got some potholes in Auburn football. What any other teams? I guess I tell you what, the defensive front was reminding me of 88 a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
They were carrying the team in some ways. Let's look at the news if there's nothing I've left out.
No.
We need to mention that Kerryon Johnson finished ninth.
Carry on my wayward son.
I think ninth is a bit low, but maybe the last thing that the voters saw of him was fumbling and a loss, you know, and that's
yes.
and not looking great. Well, so that might have hurt him a little bit.
I think it did hurt him. I think if he'd had a huge game, he would have finished, you know, fourth or fifth or whatever. But
yeah, ninth seems kind of silly, but who's going to the NFL, John? Not Stidham, but what about our running backs?
Well, who could go to the NFL, and then we'll do kind of a
okay.
in or out. Again, the criteria is out of high school for 3 years.
All
right. Okay. So Stidham is eligible.
Right.
So the pool of candidates we have to worry about, I think, are, you know, Stidham, Kerryon, Petway, Jeff Holland. Carlton Davis.
Hmm.
I think that's probably it, really.
These are players that aren't just graduating, because we're losing like most of the offensive line.
Yeah, we're losing the entire offensive line, basically. Well, I mean, we'll have the two guards back. Like, if Horton and Markell Harrell will be guard next year. But there's one other defensive lineman that potentially could go. The tackle.
Lawrence? Devler Lawrence? Or
No. He's gone. 2 seconds. I'm looking. I'm just completely blanking on his name. I got Dontavius Russell. So.
Yeah, that's it. That's who I was trying to say. I said
so. I mean, he's a junior. I don't think he's a coveted NFL prospect, but he's solid at a position where those players are in a lot of demand. So,
sure.
I mean, I don't think Stidham's going to go pro. I mean, I think he got better, but I don't think the NFL is.
Well, I want to ask you this real quick. Put Stidham in historical perspective for this season. I mean, to me, him this season, he ended up, he had his highs, he had a couple of lows. I think he ended up on a par, maybe a little bit better than a very healthy Brandon Cox or some of Jason Campbell's passing performances. Does that seem about fair to you?
I think in terms of the numbers, he had one of the better passing seasons in Auburn history.
Yeah.
I mean, I think he's in the top three or whatever in terms of single season quarterback seasons.
But you didn't see Chris Todd airing it out like that. Todd did it more with short passes and dump offs and stuff. So this was more of like a chuck it type deal, and that's why I thought of those guys.
Yeah, no, those are good comparisons. I think he's absolutely had one of the better quarterback seasons in Auburn history. And like you said, I mean, I think he has room to grow. I think he'll be back, and I think he'll be better next year, especially like since all the receivers basically will be back. So I think the two running backs, we got, you know, Petway's been hurt all year, and I think he probably really is mad at himself for not going pro last year. So I wouldn't be shocked if he tried to go this year, and he's married and has a child already, I know. So
right.
Carry on. I hope he doesn't go, because it'd be great if he came back and had, you know, had a year. But I will never blame a running back for going, because they only have so many hits they could take before their career is over.
Right.
And he is talented enough to play in the NFL. He will do fine in the NFL.
Mm-hmm.
So that wouldn't stun me if neither one of them was on the team next year. I hope Kerryon's back. I hope both of them are back, but I wouldn't be shocked. Holland is a guy that, you know, his stock is super high because he was so productive this year. I mean, he led the SEC in quarterback pressures by a huge amount, and tackles for loss and stuff. So I think, but I also think, like, physically, he's not there. Like, when you saw Carl Lawson his last year, Jeff Holland doesn't look like that. You know what I'm right. saying?
No.
I mean, he's still relying on speed and athletic ability. He needs to, I mean, he was much better against the run this year.
Mm-hmm.
But I think if he got, you know, a little bigger and stronger and did this again for another year, he'd be absolutely like a first-round draft pick.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's, you know, he's going to hear it from people. You know, you should go and stuff. And I think Carlton Davis is going to go. I think he's the one guy in this group that I will be shocked if he's back on Auburn's team next year.
Right.
Because he's, you know, he's played a ton. He's played a lot. He started all 3 years.
Right. He started as a freshman.
and he's been banged up some. Last year he was banged up a lot. But this year he stayed healthy and had a great season and made a ton of plays. And I think a big physical defensive back like him, I think they can cover and can tackle like he did in that Georgia game with Jordan Hare.
Mm-hmm.
I think the NFL, you know, is dying to draft a guy like that. So that's the guy I'll be shocked if he's back on the team next year.
I got to say, too, that, by the way, you mentioned Petway and his little girl. My wife follows Petway on Instagram just so that she can keep up with the antics of Petway's little girl, because she's very cute. She's very entertaining. So let's see. Early signing period. The rules are different this year, aren't they? Isn't this the first year that we're doing this?
Yes, it's a brand new thing in recruiting, and it's going to be different. And you need to prepare yourself for this as a college football fan.
I'm preparing.
Because the early signing period is December 20th to 22nd.
Ooh, Christmas
presents. It is a 3-day, 72-hour period.
That's just weird.
Not a 1-day, 24-hour period. So, again, the expectation is that everybody that is, you know, I think Auburn's expectation, a lot of schools' expectation is, if you're firmly committed to us and we're sure your grades are good and everything, we would rather you sign now than later.
Mm-hmm.
If we want you and you're in good shape and your grades are good shape, we want you to sign now so there's no drama later. And so we don't have to fight off the suitors. And then especially, like, obviously the guys who are going to enroll early have to sign now. But the guys who are going to do the January entry thing. But I think a lot of guys want to go ahead and sign now and get it over with. So there aren't people calling them and texting them a gazillion hours a day saying, where are you going? What about this? And, you know, they can just move on with their lives. So I think, you know, out of Auburn's 25 potential recruits, you know, maybe 18 of them will sign in the early signing period or something.
Mm-hmm.
And again, just a reminder to everyone out there, do not tweet at recruits. All right. Don't do it. You're not helping them make the decision. It's somebody's child, and they're working with their parents and other people to try and figure out the best place for them to go to school. And you tweeting at them is not helping Auburn or that kid. So just don't do it. There's no good that comes out of that kind of stuff. And if they choose a different school and they were committed to Auburn, don't tweet at them then either. So
yeah, just leave it alone.
Yeah, it's just that's not it's not a good look, and it's not helping them. It's not helping you. So don't do it. So but I'm saying that because I think it's going to be a rolling thing. I don't think everybody's going to sign like at 9 a.m. the first day. I think there's going to be some guys assigned the first day, some guys assigned the second day, some guys assigned the third day. And then I think there's going to be a group of national players, some of whom are genuinely undecided, but some of whom maybe don't have an offer where they want, who don't sign and hold out till February, till the regular signing day of February. And I think some of those guys, you're going to see their stock, you know, their stock in quotation marks go up because there isn't anybody left at that position who's as good as them, and teams want them and fans want them. And so you're going to see some guys get kind of blown up between now and February just because, you know, they're the only fish left in the ocean. So I don't go crazy about that either. I think that Auburn has a really, really good recruiting class in terms of, you know, average player ranking. I think we're 8th or 9th or something on the 24/7 right now. So we're in great shape, and we have a lot of there's a lot of talented players who are interested in Auburn. I think we're going to be fine there. So that's just the early signing period stuff.
I can see the early signing period slowly and, well, within 5 years becoming like the main one, and the February thing becoming just like the leftovers or the last few superstars, kind of a combination of the top and the bottom.
Or that maybe the really talented guys whose grades weren't in order, and the school's the school's not going to give you that binding piece of paper that takes up one of their 25 slots if you aren't going to make your grades.
Yeah,
I mean, like that's the benefit of the early sign-up period. The school is literally not going to hand you that piece of paper if your grades aren't 100% ready to go.
Right, that's what I'm saying. I feel like the early signing period will become the regular signing period, and the regular signing period will become like the et cetera. For other reasons, right? The other
No, you're exactly right.
Yeah. Let's see. We want to talk about the – did you see that video? They do the SEC Shorts video. I don't know who does that. Those people that do those cute little – they're like Saturday Night Live skits every week. Have you seen those? This one was like the prom dance between the guys were teams in the SEC and the girls were the bowl games. Have you seen that one?
I did not watch it, but keep going.
It's really good because the funniest part for me about it was that Auburn and Texas A&M guys are sitting there, and the Birmingham Bowl girl walks by in the background. They're like, Birmingham Bowl, and they both kind of look off in the other direction like, la, 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 looking away from her, you know, like we're just like, la, 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 until she walks by. And the other funny part with Auburn was so the Peach Bowl girl is dancing with the Auburn guy, and she's like, oh, you're going to love the Peach Bowl. We have the new stadium. You know, the Mercedes Stadium is awesome, and you come back for that, and we're going to have this, that, and the other. And he's like, uh-huh, uh-huh. And he's looking over her shoulder at the playoff girl who's dancing with Georgia. And I thought – and then, of course, the big finish, you know, is that the Georgia guy is dancing with the playoff girl – and the Alabama guy gets a text that says Alabama is in, and he pops up in between them, and they're all three dancing together. And he's all happy, and the Georgia guy is just like, ugh. So it's pretty cute. So the bowl game preview, and we are dancing with the Peach Bowl girl and looking fondly over our shoulder at that playoff girl. What do we know about Central Florida right now besides the fact that their coach is going off – at some point to Nebraska? And again, I'll say it again, I would rather be the coach of Central Florida any day of the week than Nebraska. I know he's an alumnus and a star and everything. I get that. This is like, what's his name, going back to Michigan, Harbaugh. I get it. But still, I'd rather be in Orlando with all those players than in the middle of the freaking cornfield. But no offense, well, Nebraska.
A couple things. One is, it's not just him going. The entire coaching staff is going to Nebraska.
Wow.
All of them. So.
Bless their hearts.
Yeah. But I mean, I think the different. Here's the thing, Van. This team was undefeated and was a great, great team for a Group of Five team and didn't get a sniff of the playoff.
Yep.
Not That's even. True. I think they were. I mean, they were like 15th. It was insulting how low in the playoff rankings how low they were.
Well, to be fair though, a lot of that is who they played. It wasn't just the school.
I understand that, but what you're saying is like the Boise States of the world and those kind of teams, yeah. like unless they have the schedule like Houston had last year where they played Oklahoma and Louisville, you have no chance.
Right.
And so this year, this team, the you know UCF played one power conference team. It was Maryland, yeah. and they beat the crud out of them. But Maryland was awful this year. They were worse than that Louisiana Monroe team we played. That's how bad Maryland was. Yeah.
And yet they beat Texas.
Yeah. But having said that, Central Florida's really, really good. Mm-hmm. And this is good. Auburn fans don't want to hear this. This is a very even matchup.
Yeah.
Let me say this. I'm going to paint the kind of most dangerous case scenario for Auburn.
Right.
Because the wild card is the coaches and how much attention they're paying to Nebraska and recruiting for Nebraska versus preparing these players for the bowl game. And are the players the players, I think, view this as kind of their Super Bowl mm-hmm. because they were disrespected by the playoff committee and stuff, and this is their chance to show that they deserve to be there, that they're as good as any team in the country.
We need to be kissing their butts from now till January 1st. Like, Gus needs to be out there every day going, well, this is a fine team here. This team undefeated. This should be a playoff team. And they're a good tough team. And we're in for it. They're loaded. They're a special team. We're in for it. It's going to be a tough. I mean, he needs to be doing that all the time.
I think he's going to do that anyhow. On all the, like, the advanced metric kind of things, that I look at the advanced rankings. I mean, in a lot of them, Auburn and Central Florida are pretty close to each other. Mm-hmm. You know, like in Bill Connolly's ranking, I think like Auburn's, one of them's eighth, the one of them's ninth. So don't think that this is like a, you know, like that Northern Illinois team that Florida State played in the Orange Bowl 5 years ago, whatever that was, where they just showed up and beat the crud out of them. This is a team with a lot of players who would play in the SEC with a really good coaching staff. They're great on offense. They're very dangerous. And it's honestly, it's kind of like the Oregon offense, but also, you know, a better passing game than the Oregon team that we played, and more like the Mariota kind of passing game, the Oregon offense.
Oh boy.
So, you know, they're very dangerous on offense. They're fourth nationally in total offense. And the quarterback, the quarterback is Mackenzie Milton, is a great player, an excellent player. He finished ahead of Kerryon in the Heisman voting. And this is he's a runner and a passer. He makes a lot of plays, and I looked him up today. I was looking at like his passer rating this season. He was second in the country. He was behind only Baker Mayfield. Okay, and so Baker Mayfield this year and last year has had the highest two college passer ratings of any quarterback ever, I think. But if you look at this guy, take Baker Mayfield out of it. This guy, Milton, had a better quarterback rating than anybody in college football since 2011.
Good gosh.
Okay? So in that pool is Marcus Mariota, Jameis Winston, Aaron Murray, Johnny Manziel, et cetera, et cetera. Okay? So he had a really, really good season passing the football. He rushes for about 40 yards per game and throws for 315 yards per game. He averages like 7 yards a carry. And in a lot of games, they're killing the other team, so he doesn't throw a lot in the second half. So offensively, they're great. You know, they're really good. They spread you out and they go fast and they throw the ball a lot. And they run the ball, you know, some. But like their running back is more like an Oregon running back. He's a much smaller, quicker guy, the main running back they use. And the quarterback runs it a lot, obviously. But they're, I mean, they averaged, I think they, the lowest point total they scored in any game this season was 31. So that was their worst game.
Yeah, I just brought it up here. They scored 31 twice against Navy and SMU. Good Lord, they did. Look at all the canceled. They had three games canceled.
No, I don't. I think they had one game canceled.
It says they had the September 8th game versus Memphis canceled, the September 16 versus Georgia Tech canceled, and the September 30 versus Maine canceled. That left them 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. Yeah. That's why they had to play all the way until December the 2nd to get in 12 games. They canceled three games in September.
Wow.
Yeah. Well, no, now it says, oh, they canceled the
main. No, they rearranged them.
That's it. They canceled the main game and put the Memphis game there.
Yeah, they didn't play Georgia Tech either. I mean, that, I don't know if that was completely canceled out or not. I don't know what the deal was with that.
They moved Memphis down and beat the snot out of them, by the way, 40-13.
Memphis is a really good team, and they had to play them twice. They had to play them in the championship game of that league, too. So,
yeah.
Defensively, they're not great. You know, they're okay. They have a lot of good athletes on defense, but they're not great. But they're also, they're on a team. It's kind of like one of those, again, I could compare them to the old school Oregon teams where they were the defense on a team that went fast and scored like 50 points in a lot of games. So the defense kept getting thrown out there a lot. And a lot of times it was in situations where the other team was desperate to score and was, you know, going crazy trying to score. So that puts a lot of pressure on the defense that way.
Right.
But they're not, you know, particularly great at anything defensively. And they're also in a league, I mean, that league, AAC, they're in. There are some pretty good offensive teams in that league. I mean, Memphis is great in offense, and Navy's tough to play, and South Florida's tough. So that's one thing. And then, I mean, in terms of individual defensive players, they have a guy named Shaquem Griffin, who you're going to hear about. If you watch the South Florida game and some of the other games, you know who he is. He's a twin brother who's already in the NFL. And Shaquem Griffin is one of the best linebackers in that conference, and he only has one hand.
So he was
born with one hand, but he has an interception this year and a couple of caused fumbles and a bunch of sacks and a bunch of tackles. So he's a great player, and you're going to hear that story a lot during the game and in the lead up to the game. The other thing is, this is not what Auburn fans want to hear, but they are really good at punt and kick returns.
Oh boy.
Yes, so we have our work cut out for us.
We really do.
Between now and the bowl game and shoring up that part of the game.
I see they did give up 24 points to the mighty UConn Fighting Rhett Lashleys, but they scored 49.
This is true. This is true. But you don't know, like, when did UConn score their 24 points? Like, that's was true. It – I think it was later. They're an explosive offensive team. I mean, I think they haven't played anybody on the same planet as our defense, and I think we're going to cause them real problems, our defensive line is, in terms of disrupting what they do in the same way that, like, Auburn in the 2010 title game disrupted what Oregon wanted to do on offense. But they're also really good at passing, and I think he's going to cause us some problems in the same way that Baker Mayfield did, where he just kind of makes stuff happen, and he can run away, you know, and rush, you know, run up the field by himself and make stuff happen, but also kind of scramble around and get his guys open and then throw it. So,
John, I just added up how many points they scored, and I just did it on the fly really fast. I got something around 520 points.
I'd buy that.
They scored about 520 points this season. I mean, in their last six games, they scored 73, 31, 49, 45, 49, and 62.
No, it's 593.
Oh, wow. I undervalued them.
It's 49 a game.
They had, sorry. Well, God, they had 4 games where they scored at least 60 points. A third of their games they scored at least 60 points.
Yeah. So I mean, again, Some of those teams were great, but this is a very, very, very explosive offensive team. So if they're focused and the coaching staff is focused and spends time to make a good game plan, then they could be dangerous in terms of – so we need to go – Auburn needs to go in the game with a couple of things in mind. One is we have to score points. We have the ball.
Yes.
Like we have to – you know, we have to be efficient on offense and make plays. Their defense is really bad at giving up big plays. So I think we can get a lot of big plays in the run and pass game and score. We don't want to get into a track meet with them, but I'd like for us to run the ball and keep them off the field some a little bit. And I'm sure that they're Gus and them are thinking the same thing. And then I think defensively, you know, we just got to break serve a few times, basically.
Yeah. You know who we got to. You know who I'd like to see have a good game and have a big game, a big breaking out game? This could be the Nate Craig Myers game.
I like it.
Because we know that Ryan Davis will be fine.
But yes.
I'd love to see the a few deep balls or even intermediate balls to Nate Craig Myers. Give us a little taste of what he maybe can do next year.
Mm-hmm. I like it. That's a good call.
All right, anything else about Central Florida? And we'll talk about them again, obviously, in the days before the
game. No, there'll be some news leading up to the game I'm sure we'll talk about. But the biggest thing is that the wild card is the coaching uncertainty.
Yeah.
I mean, I think if the coaches hadn't left, like if you were saying, if they had said, no, we're all staying here,
yeah,
then I'd be a little worried.
Right.
You know, because like you said, it's a no-win game. How motivated are Auburn's players going to be? Because you know Central Florida is going to be fired up.
I'm telling you, that program, I mean, the only thing they don't have is the conference yet and the tradition. But if they can get the roots planted and eventually get into a better conference, I'm telling you what, they could instantly be better on a consistent basis than half the teams in the SEC. They could be a better team every year than Kentucky, than Vanderbilt, than South Carolina, than Arkansas. I mean, they're in Orlando. They had a student body of 100,000 people. They should be able to take, you know, 10 good players away from Florida and Florida State and Miami, don't you think, every year?
Yes, 20.
Yeah, I'm telling you,
there's plenty of players from Florida to go around.
There's a sleeping giant. All they need is the reputation that those 4- and 5-star players want to go there. And they will be unstoppable. I'm telling you, they're what Florida State was in the late 70s right now.
That's a good analogy.
Mark my words. Coaching hires. You wanted to look at the various SEC coaching hires, and what a year of turnover this turned out to be, sort of from our perspective. So let's start with Florida grabbing Dan Mullen from Mississippi State. This is a strange – I mean, I guess it makes sense because of the whole connection to Urban Meyer and Florida and all that. And certainly he's a good coach. He's proven over the years, year in and year out, that he can take a program and a team that probably should be 4-8 every year and make them 8-4 or 7-5 or something like that. What do you see as far as Mullen to Florida?
I think Mullen's a good coach. I'm happy he's out of the West.
Yeah.
That's how I feel. I mean, that's one of the things that tells me it was a good hire. I'm glad we don't play him every year.
We don't play Florida ever. I calculated the other day, remember? We have played Clemson like 4 times as often as we've played Florida the last 10 years. We've played Florida once since Urban Meyer was there. Once.
And the thing with Mullen is he does a good job developing quarterbacks and coaching quarterbacks. And that's been kind of the black hole at Florida since Meyer left. So, you know, if he does that there, if he goes in there and they have good quarterback play and they're scoring points, then I think the Florida fans will be happy. And I think they'll be fine. He brought Todd Grantham with him, which, you know, I don't think he's great, but he's okay as a defensive coordinator. But, I mean, I think Mullen will get more consistent offensive play than McElwain or Will Muschamp did. The question is, can they keep the defense at the level it's been at the last 4 or 5 years? And I don't know about that. But, right. I mean, I think he's going to offensively, I think they're going to be better than they have been the past, since Urban Meyer left. I really do.
I just want to point out about Florida that because we pretty much owned them in the 2000s and the 2010s, the one time we played them in the 2010s, it kind of felt like when Spurrier got there that Florida owned us, but as it turns out, the only decade in history that Florida really owned Auburn was the 90s. It's the only decade. And then we even had two huge wins over them when they were like number one in the 90s.
Yes.
So they really don't have a decade where they absolutely dominated us. That's not something I thought I would be looking back and saying.
Yeah.
It's amazing. Okay, so...
But again, from the Auburn perspective, too, mm-hmm. I look at this and say, we don't have to play Mullen anymore, but now Georgia has a more competent Florida, tougher Florida to play every year, and that's a good thing.
Soften them up.
And LSU has to play them every year as a permanent opponent, and that's a good thing.
That is a very good thing.
If LSU's better. If Florida's better. So I view that as a positive.
Positive all the way around. Tennessee got Pruitt. It's funny because about a month ago I was tweeting – why is nobody looking at Alabama's defensive coordinator? What's his first name? Pruitt? I can't even remember.
Jeremy
Pruitt. Because, it wasn't that long ago. In 2013, he was Florida State's defensive coordinator against us in the Rose Bowl. And then he went from there to Alabama
Then he was at Georgia for 2 years.
Oh, that's right.
And it dominated the SEC, did a great job there against us and other teams. And then when Kirby Smart left, he went to Alabama.
He went to Alabama, right. So you could see him rising up the ladder very rapidly because before Florida State, he was an Alabama defensive back coach, right?
Yes.
So he came up the ladder within a decade
he wasn't a coach on the field, but he was like the player personnel guy. He was basically the recruiting coordinator for Alabama.
So he went from that to head coach of a major SEC program in about a decade. That's pretty impressive.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't have the greatest reputation in terms of his personality, I don't think, right? But he seems like he's a pretty darn competent defensive coach. So,
no, and he's a younger guy. So I think he has a good reputation as a defensive coordinator. From the Auburn perspective, I'm glad he's gone. I'm glad that he is not on a team that we play every year as the defensive coordinator, because I think his defenses in particular gave Gus the most trouble. I mean, him at Florida State, him at Georgia, he at Alabama, even more than Kirby Smart. I think the things that he did caused this offense problems. So I'm glad to see him gone. And also, I'm glad because he's raiding kind of the Alabama and Georgia staffs for other coaches to go with him. And he's hiring away guys from both of those staffs, which will weaken both of those teams in the long run. And potentially it's distracting Alabama heading into the playoff run, which, Saban hates. The other good part is, again, a good Tennessee is another quality opponent that Georgia and Alabama have to play. And I'm happy about that.
That's three SEC East teams off the top of my head that now have Saban defensive coordinators as head coaches.
Mm-hmm.
South Carolina, Florida, South Carolina, Tennessee, and Georgia.
Yeah.
That's crazy. Get this four-game stretch that Tennessee plays next year. Starting September 22nd, Tennessee plays Florida, Georgia, Auburn, Alabama. And then, just for the dessert, they go to South Carolina. Five straight weeks. Well, no, there's an off week in the middle there, but still, in terms of games, Florida at home, at Georgia, at Auburn, Alabama at home, at South Carolina. You know how we always say that Tennessee's schedule is so front-loaded? But next year, it's very middle-loaded. They have West Virginia, East Tennessee, UTEP to start out, and then they've got those five, and then they finish up with Charlotte, Kentucky, Missouri, and Vanderbilt.
Mm-hmm.
So they've got five right in the middle that will tell the tale. That's just crazy. I don't want to give our season preview, but that just struck me. Okay.
No, I mean, they're they were terrible this year. They didn't win a conference game. You know, they'll be marginally better next year, but I'm, you know, they're going to be at the bottom of the East again.
I hope so. Jimbo goes to Texas A&M, the Collie Dogs. I feel like they are overpaying for 1 year that he had that we know very well, and they're going to get less than they think they're going to get.
Well, I think the what they think they're going to get is national title.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they looked around and said, "We want to win a national title. We'll on the pony up huge money to get a coach that could potentially get us there." And they so they went and hired Jimbo. Are you more worried about Jimbo than you worry about Kevin Sumlin?
About the same.
From an Auburn perspective.
About the same, honestly.
Yeah. I mean, I think
he's an excellent recruiter. Sumlin was a really good coach.
Yeah. I mean, I agree. I mean, I think Jimbo's a really good coach. He's an excellent recruiter. We'll see who all his assistants are. He's obviously in an area with a ton of good recruits in Texas. But that wasn't a big problem for Sumlin either. They got a lot of recruits there. So it'd be interesting to see if Jimbo adjusts his offense. He's been kind of a more traditional pro-style passing game guy. And a lot of the high schools in Texas do the spread stuff. So will he go more that way because that's what the available talent pool is and the high schools are feeding that? Or will he stick with what he likes to do? He does have a good reputation for developing quarterbacks and coaching quarterbacks over the years. But, I mean, before he got there and at Florida State. But you're right. I mean, they were really good in the years leading up to that national title. But they were, you know, what did they do besides that? You know, they won the ACC a couple of times at a time when the rest of the ACC was pretty mediocre.
Right.
It's a lot of money. And I think the expectations are super high.
Yep.
I mean, they expect to win the SEC and win the national title. And, that's a lot. That's a lot. In this division, you're asking for it. If that's your expectation, we know that.
So. I think that Kevin Sumlin ran into some of the same issues that Gus did. And which is just some weird stuff happened. They had some injuries. They had some players that didn't pan out. And they ended up going 8-4 just like we did a bunch. I mean, honestly, Sumlin and Malzahn the last few years are very similar. They track together. Except, they had their 12-2 year.
The early success. And then
kind of trailing down a little bit. The main difference is that we got in Stidham and Kerryon and a great defensive line and Kevin Steele. Yeah, and they didn't, and they trailed off, and we kind of resurged. That's the whole difference right there. Mississippi State, we talked a little bit about Moorhead before. I don't know, and Ole Miss, Matt Luke. Honestly, let me do him first. I think that Matt Luke is a placeholder until all the sanctions are over, and then they'll go out and try to get him a good coach. What do we have left? We've already said all that, though. What do we have left to say about Moorhead or Luke? Anything?
I mean, it's just interesting to see what the coaching staff wise and what holds together with Luke if any of those guys leave. Moorhead hired Bob Shoup, who was the defensive coordinator at Tennessee the last 2 years, and then was at Penn State with Moorhead, or maybe not with Moorhead before that. So I think that's a good defensive coordinator hire. I think Shoup's solid. So we'll see the rest of his staff. I mean, who the guys are, but I think Moorhead's going to be fine. Luke, I agree 100%. I think he got the job because a lot of coaches looked at that and go, I don't want to coach in the SEC West with both arms tied behind my back.
Yeah, it's bad enough without it. Yeah,
that's right. You're fighting uphill at Ole Miss in a regular year. Right. You want to give them all these sanctions and let your best players transfer away. Speaking of which, Shea Patterson announced today he's transferring to Michigan.
Yep.
So, you're gonna have problems.
Yep. And then lastly, Chad Morris to Arkansas. That made sense to me. I kind of felt like that was a logical move.
100%.
How are they going to be with him?
I mean, I think it if they needed to open up the offense and get away from some of this Burt stuff, we know you're not going to win, you know, trying to do the I formation stuff too much in the West with all the defensive talent on these teams. So they needed to go to more of a spread kind of offense, and they needed somebody that could get them back into recruiting in Texas.
And
Chad Morris can do that. And he has ties, remember, because he was at Clemson before that, so he has some ties to them. Mm-hmm. I mean, there was talk early on. He told some people, oh, I can get the Clemson defense coordinator to come here with me. I'll believe that when I see it.
Right.
But I think that may have been message board crap. But I think it's a solid hire. I think he's, you know, when he took over SMP, I mean, he didn't make SMU into this national power, but when he took over, that was one of the worst teams in the whole country. And right. Absolutely the dregs. And he made them very competitive and explosive on offense. So I think he'll do a good job there. I think it'll be different than Burt, and it'll be entertaining at least.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Any Auburn assistant's going to move?
You know, we've heard a couple of names rumbled around for other jobs. We talked about the Kevin Steele, the Tennessee thing before. But, I mean, I think there was rumors, about Chip Lindsey in South Alabama. He didn't get that job. But there's, going to be some – I think there's always going to be some rumors about some of the other ones getting offered jobs other places. I don't see a ton of movement, but it could happen. If – Tim Horton gets offered an offensive coordinator job or something like that, you could see something potentially. But I mean, the other thing is, again, they're adding another coaching position in, I think, January 1st, maybe. So that'll be interesting to see who Auburn goes out and gets to be the extra assistant coach. So,
I just got to point out something to you. I was looking at the schedule for next year and trying to figure out what game we might be wanting to go to and stuff. And I thought, ooh, Tennessee, that might be a fun one. I should run that by John. I just saw it's the weekend of Archon, which is like one of the only conventions I'm even doing next year. So can't do Tennessee. Dang it. We're going to figure this out, John. We got to get together, put our brains together, figure this out. Let's see. I have
Factoid of the Week.
Factoid of the Week.
And this is a couple of weeks late in mentioning it, but it's never a bad time to mention a win over Alabama being a good thing, because
you can mention it every show.
Because I just have to point out, like the 1972 Miami Dolphins, what are the 72 Dolphins famous for doing every year, John?
Being undefeated.
And what do they do every year at some point in every season?
They pop the champagne when the last team loses, or the last undefeated team loses.
And when we won the Iron Bowl, John, we could pop the champagne this year, because you know why? What do I tweet all the time? It's like my most popular tweet, like 85,000 retweets.
The last undefeated team in the SEC was 2010 Auburn.
It was, and every year, something seems like, oh, this is going to be, oh, they're, nope. We owe Ole Miss for a couple of those, by the way. Ole Miss knocked off Alabama in, I guess, 15 to keep them from doing it. So,
I just want to remind everybody again that in 2015, the only reason that Alabama won the SEC and got to the playoff and won the national title was because Arkansas made that stupid 4th-and-43 against Ole Miss. The only reason. Okay, I'm still mad about that.
I know you carrying that one. There's some I carry like that, so I can't blame you at all. But that's so funny.
It's the only reason Alabama was there, because Arkansas made that stupid play against Ole Miss.
That's unbelievable. Ole Miss would have been in the SEC championship game, wouldn't they?
Yes, 100%. They would have.
Crap.
And Alabama would not.
That's amazing. All right. Let's see. I gotta quickly do a shout out to Mark Carter on Twitter. He provided these awesome, he sent me four of these. I'll send two to you. These awesome koozies where on one side it says 2013 kick six, on the other side it says 2017 kick ass. So he sent me four of these. I'm going to send two to you. That's really cool. After we did the show, a couple of weeks ago where I called the show that after Charles Barkley, you recall? Mm-hmm. Okay. So I appreciate Mark doing that. And he's, I imagine, I don't have his information in front of me. I should have tried to track it down. But if you're wanting to get some of these koozies, get a hold of me or Mark on Twitter, and I'm sure he'll sell them to you for a reasonable price. I also want to thank all of our listeners that have been emailing lately. We've gotten several really cool, awesome emails that kind of made our day, I think, to a certain degree. You know, it's been really nice to hear that people are enjoying the show so much, because John and I have a – I think I can speak for you, John, say we have a good time doing this. I don't think you're just doing it every week for, what, 5 years now because you hate it. So it's
– No, but it is nice. Sometimes I feel like we're just crying in the wilderness, you know, that we're just we're putting this out on the internet and it's just floating out into space and, you know, and no one hears it or whatever. And so it's nice when sometimes we get these emails and people say, hey, I really enjoyed that show and that kind of stuff, or I enjoyed the podcast. And so those are always great to hear.
It is great. And I got to say, you think that because you don't obsessively stare at the download numbers like I do. So, see, I don't think that because, in fact, I got to tell you, we currently have 142,978 downloads of 154 episodes that we've done of this show over the last 12 years. That blows my mind because that's about 1,000 downloads per week. And that is bearing in mind that we also go out over the War Eagle Sports Radio Network, which does not count on those statistics. So we appreciate you guys listening, and there are a bunch of you out there listening, and it means a lot. We really do appreciate it. I've got to, of course, quickly thank the patrons. Let me run down the list of our awesome patrons. And if you want to, John and I are working to come up with activities and off-season antics and things that will keep our patrons entertained and involved throughout the off season when there's no actual college football going on. We're doing the Bowl Mania bowl pick competition, just started today. So if you haven't gotten the email about that, let John know and he'll hook you up with the link to get in and join our bowl pick'em thing. I put my picks in today too. And that'll be fun. We're going to be coming up with stuff and doing stuff like this in the off season, just to make sure everybody gets your value added benefit from also supporting our shows. Our patrons include Nicholas Cottrell, Joseph Fine, Christopher Burleson, Neil Dyer, and Steve Trewick, Phil Amthor of WeHaveDonuts.com, Richard Stevens, and then David Evers, Tom Anderson, Timothy Dan Thompson, Wes Atkinson, Steve Harlan, Andrew Barber, Jared Albrecht, Rich Reimer, Bill Matthews, John McCune, Will Summerford, and Catherine England, David Simpson, Josh Teal, Mike Finley, Randall Walker, C.T. Wayne, Earl Ricks, Dave Powell, Michael Kirshner, Tony Perry, George Gaston, Logan Chilton, and Alex Nguyen, Clay Henson, Mick Vigicana, Chris Thrash, J.W. Rice, Wardam Wade, Dave Medinas, Nicholas Craig, Kenneth Brent Rains, John Stubbs, Mark Squire, Joey Miller, Matthew Wagstaff, Russell Milling, and our one-time and anonymous donors. Thank you guys so much. You can join the party, join the family, join the fun. The easiest way is go to www.plexico.net, plexico.net. I've got links to everything there. Just click on the little Patreon logo or where it says our Patreon. It'll take you right to it. Or if you want to go directly, go to www.patreon.com and Van Allen Plexico. You can either search it or tack that onto the end there and you'll get right to it. We really do really appreciate it. We have a new podcast entire series now, John. We've got three. We have the White Rocket Entertainment feed, which gives you the shows like where you and I talk about Game of Thrones or whatnot, or where Mark Buskett and I talked about Kingdom of Heaven. We do all of our various random stuff there in the White Rocket feed, where Jared and I talk about Quantum Leap or Babylon 5. You know, it's kind of a catch-all of our one-off stuff. We have the Auburn, the Wishbone show here that you're listening to. We have a third new series on a completely separate channel now, and that is On Her Majesty's Secret Podcast. It was in the White Rocket feed. It now has its own feed. So if you want to hear John and Jared and Alan Porter and me talking about James Bond incessantly, tune in, go to iTunes and look for On Her Majesty's Secret Podcast, or just go to secretpodcast.podbean.com. And you can hear, we're going to be putting up a show about every week or two. Alan Porter and I, Alan is a famous author, expert on James Bond. He and I will be doing a review of each of the movies one a month. And then John and Jared and I do our occasional World Cup of Bond and Gadgets of Bond and all that good stuff. So tune in. All right, John, I think it is time to poke Mira and wake her up.
It's time for listener questions. Dun, dun, dun. On the AU Wishbone Podcast.
She totally improv the dun, dun, dun. I think that's cool. So let's see. What do we got coming in from our loyal listeners this week?
Like compared to some other weeks, it's a little lighter in the mailbag.
But
it's understandable. We didn't have a huge game or, you know, some drama with the coach leaving that we need to ask about. The first question is from Clell Lawrence, who writes on Tiger Bloggin.
Mm-hmm. AU Tiger Bloggin.
AU Tiger Bloggin. And this is his question. He says, Auburn finished 11-3 this Auburn, you know, could finish 11-3 this season, and ranked in the top 10, but a lot of people will undoubtedly focus on the three losses more than the, you know, potential 11 victories.
Guilty, Your Honor. I'm sorry about that. I really shouldn't. I apologize. I feel bad about it. I'm serious. I'm totally dead serious. I do feel like I focus too much on the losses. And I want to enjoy all those double-digit wins. John continues.
He goes on to say, were they perfect? Absolutely not. But I believe when healthy, this football team could beat anyone in the country. Mm-hmm. I think that's fair.
Yep.
I mean, especially this season. You look around college football, there's not a team, if we played the way we did against Georgia and Alabama, that this team couldn't beat. Looking back at every Auburn season since 2017, how many times could you realistically make this statement in Auburn history? And then he goes on to talk about the importance of keeping Gus as the head coach. And then also that he's shown an abundance of growth as a head coach this season and put the foundation in place to build a championship team. So I think that's really well said. And I think how many times in Auburn history have you had, like we talked about, the potential was there for this team, they're playing at their level, to beat anybody in the country, to go undefeated. How many other times has that happened? Well, I mean, in terms of having that kind of team.
Well, look at, that's a good point, but look at this. You can honestly say that for stretches of 4 out of 5 of Gus's seasons as head coach, we were at that point. Because the 13 team, at their best, was a steamroller. Nobody could stand up to them. The 14 team before the defense collapsed was in the playoffs. The 16 team, at their best, was a playoff team. And this year's team could have beaten anybody in the country at their best. And that was even without Petway. So 15, when we had the quarterback issues and the defense was kind of struggling to get their feet under them, 15 was the only year that we weren't just – at some point in the season, a juggernaut. And I agree, there haven't been that many years, because with Chizik, it was that 1 year. 9-11 were pretty average. And, you know, Tuberville had maybe 2 or 3 teams that would that could reach that level. The 04 team, obviously. I think the 05 and 06 teams both had the potential, but they also had the potential to melt down as they did. And then, you know, Pat Dye had a couple of teams that were as good as anybody, just not very creative on offense some of those years. So I agree. I think this is as good of a run in some ways, especially given that we have a 14-team conference now and play 12 games plus a championship game plus playoffs. I mean, given the way that college football is so different now than it was just a few years ago, I think that, yeah, I mean, you got to give him his due.
You do, and I think the growth part that he points out was a big thing, because Gus couldn't remain the way he was and the team and the program moved forward. He had to adjust and change, and I think that's something we needed to see from him, and he did it. I mean, the offense at the end of the year is not something that you would recognize from 2013 or whatever.
No, right. That's right.
So it was, but that we need that Because as we pointed out, I mean, the defenses we play are really good and they're really well coached and they have a lot of time and research to map out your offense. So if you don't shake things up every once in a while, then you're going to be, they're going to put you in a box. One of the other points that somebody else made and asked about, I want to ask you about this. Somebody else had asked about how long Gus is signing a new contract. How long do you think he will be at Auburn? With the idea that in the current coaching atmosphere, there aren't going to be any more, you know, Bobby Bowdens and guys that are out of school for 30 years or whatever kind of things. You know, that after 10 years or so, you, even if you win a lot, you wear out your welcome in a lot of ways.
Absolutely.
And that people, you're kind of sick of the team and they're kind of sick of you. So, and this is what, year five for Gus?
Yeah. Look at Tuberville. Tuberville, 10 years. And at five, we almost ejected him and then went on to 10.
So what do you think about that theory?
I absolutely think so. I think that he'll probably be at Auburn I would say 5 or 6 more years, and by his 12th year, he's at Pat Dye territory. And I mean, you know, he's not going to, something will happen. But I mean, I hope we have, I think that the way we're recruiting right now sets him up for the next 2 or 3 years at least to be very good and everything will be all right. You just have to hope that we don't do one of our classic meltdowns where, you know, we get on probation and this happens and that happens. And the next thing you know, he's resigning and, you know, it's all melting down. And you might think, well, why would I say that? Well, it always seems to happen. You know, something weird happened. It happened to Pat Dye. It happened to Terry Bowden. It happened to Tuberville. Chizik just imploded. I mean, it always happens. So why wouldn't it happen this time? I don't know.
I think it's fair. I mean, I think he has a shelf life, you know, like anybody else. And I think, you know, even if we win consistently, if we're not, you know, win another national title in the next couple of years, I think there's going to be some fans that get restless with him. And like we, you know, just from the email we just talked about, that fans focus more on the losses than the wins, honestly, and they eat at us. So it makes it, this is a good lesson that we need to appreciate the wins, especially again, in the dark days of the off season, go back and watch the highlights from that Georgia game of Jordan Hare and enjoy every minute of that.
Absolutely.
So, and I think the other question that somebody asked me, I was talking to somebody else this week, and they, another Auburn fan that I work with, and they asked me, who on this team that didn't play a big role this year, do you look forward to playing a big role next year? Who's somebody you think that was underutilized perhaps? And maybe you've already named him.
Well, the first thing that, yeah, besides three name, Devin Barrett, I think could be bigger and better. And I would like Malik Miller. Malik Willis, I hope he continues. I mean, you know, right now, I'm not going to compare Stidham to Patrick Nix because they're very different, although Nix was a darn good quarterback. But right now, Stidham is Patrick Nix and Malik Willis is Damian Craig. You bring him in, you know, you got the steady guy and then you got the understudy that comes in and does kind of a specialty play. That was how we used Damian Craig in 94, 95, was he would come in and do some kind of like goal line play or something, kind of like they brought Malik Willis in to try the run, the option thing, you know, the read option. So that's kind of how he is now, and I'm hoping to see a little bit more of him in special packages next year. And by the way, somebody pointed out that if we get Bo Nix, and I don't have any reason to think we wouldn't, since his dad and his granddad are Auburn, you know, legacies, unless he's going to pull a Peyton Manning and go some like Tennessee instead of Ole Miss. Our quarterback situation going forward is even after we lose Stidham, we would theoretically have Malik Willis, Joey Gatewood, and maybe Bo Nix. That's not a bad situation, and it is light years ahead of Jeremy Johnson and Sean White.
And what's the other guy's name that was hurt the whole time and transferred away? I've already blacked out on his name.
See, I could never remember his name when he was on the team. Now you've just joined me over here in the oblivion. But that's not a bad situation to have with those three if we have those three. Even though we're not getting the Georgia guy, the guy that's going to Georgia, Fields, even without him, we're doing pretty darn well.
That's right. And I think that's a great call on the backup quarterback.
And
for the
Gatewood
for the next
has
year.
Been looking awesome in the playoffs.
He has. I think Malik Willis is a great call because I think this year we were reluctant to play him because he was a true freshman fresh out of high school. And we had to play him because Sean White was gone and we needed a backup quarterback. But next year he will be an experienced player and we don't have to risk Stidham in these games when we're beating the crud out of some other team, and we don't have to worry about getting Stidham game experience in those games. So I think we'll play Malik Willis a lot more. I expect him to get a lot of snaps next year against the smaller schools, and we'll pull Stidham earlier and play Malik Willis a lot more. And I think we'll probably get him in some of the other games, give him a series here or there, a couple plays in the heat of the moment, just so in case something happens, just sit him in a big game that Willis is ready to go. So, no, I think that's a good call.
Absolutely. Any other questions?
Nope, that's it.
All right. Well, we have an around the SEC. Let me go ahead and hit the button.
Trip around the SEC.
Except I think we pretty much already did when we talked about the coaching changes. I know you want to mention the wishbone bowl mania for the patrons. Is there anything else going on in the SEC that we need to know about?
Shea Patterson transferring, the Ole Miss, other Ole Miss players transferring out.
Poor Matt
one
Luke.
Thing. He knew what he signed up for when he took the deal. He wasn't getting called to be head coach at some other school. So
that's like being hired to be the pilot of an airline and they assign you to a plane that's already crashing into a mountain. It's like they use the Star Trek transporter to beam you into the cockpit and you get there and the plane is like about to crash into the mountain.
I think you were right about him being the guy for that. Like he is the alum who would take the job, who would hold things together. And while they get through this terrible time, and then when they're on their way out of that and building back towards respectability, they'll dump him and hire some up-and-coming hot coach.
He takes the bullet for him.
He does. I think that's his role in this. They'll pay him well and all that, but I think that's his role, to be the tackling dummy.
Wow. I think his coaching philosophy off-season can be summed up as
smoke weed every day.
I just love an opportunity to play that. All right. Yeah, I think that's pretty much it. I do want to mention one other thing, and we'll wrap up, lest I'm forgetting anything, and that is that I did notice that we've sold a handful of copies of Decades of Dominance the last week or so. So I guess people are getting their – and I don't ever mention it anymore. And Lorendo, Season of Our Dreams. So let me just mention real quick, if you're looking for a nice Christmas present of less than $20, for a loved one who loves Auburn – we've got three paperback books out there, Decades of Dominance, Auburn Football in the Modern Era, Lorendo, the biography by Ken Ringer of Coach Lorendo from Auburn, the offensive coordinator, who had an amazing life, and Season of Our Dreams, our week-by-week chronicle of the 2010 Cam Newton season. So they're all three on Amazon, or you can go to, again, if you're going to plexico.net anyway to check out the Patreon thing, go to plexico.net, and at the very bottom of that new website, there's a link that takes you to all three of our Auburn books, and they're each one of them, less than $20. And in fact, if you want one signed to somebody, we could even try to. You could just contact us directly, and we could see about getting it signed and mailed off to them. That might cost a few bucks in postage because we'd have to ship the thing in a dang hurry now. But we would be willing to give it a shot. So, okay, John, any last thoughts about this week before we wrap it up?
No, other than actual bowl games start on Saturday, I think. So I'm excited about that.
We got through the Army, Navy, and Heisman weekend, which is like my least favorite football weekend of the year because it's like that's the only choices you have, and I don't even watch the Heisman.
Army, Navy, and the snow is pretty good.
It was pretty good, yeah. Army had the perfect camouflage. I got to tell you, John, 2 years in a row, I'm getting pretty dang sick of losing to freaking Army.
Go Army.
Go Navy, beat Army. All right, I just knocked my little Iron Man off, dang it. All right, well, I think that's going to do it for this week. Our time is up. And hey, you know what? We thank you for yours. War Eagle, John.
War Eagle, man.
Thanks for listening to the Wishbone Podcast. All past episodes are available at auwishbone.podbean.com and via iTunes. For more Auburn fun, join us on Facebook at facebook.com/auwishbone and follow the show on Twitter at auwishbone. War Eagle.
So what becomes of you, my love, when they have finally stripped you off? The handbags and the glad rags that your granddad had to sweat so you could buy.
This has been a White Rocket Entertainment production.
Thank you for listening to the AU Wishbone Podcast.
Go to bed.